Just give him a call.
This is Ask an Attorney, all about Ask Florida law attorney. With attorney Joe Pippin. If you have a legal Ask question, call Joe right now in Tampa. Call 813-287-5700. Anywhere else, toll free at 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. The law office is open. And now your host, Joe Pippin.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. I'm attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. The law office is open early this Saturday morning. It's 8:02 in the morning, and we are open for business, open for your questions. And the whole purpose of the show is for you to call in, ask a legal question, learn from the answer, I hope, and also help other people understand who many people have similar circumstances. Hey, you're not asking an unusual question that usually just fits you. You're asking a question that lots of people need to know and have some information and advice. So that's what we're here for, help you understand, help you get through an issue perhaps, lead you in the right direction. And you have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. Question can be just about anything. It can be about wills, trust, probate, guardianship, power of attorneys, health care surrogates. Can be about family law, personal injury. Can be about Medicaid law. Can be just about any question that you might have. So you have 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. I'm attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. Host of Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law since 1984. Was nationally syndicated for a couple of years with the same format. And believe it to be the longest running continual radio show in Florida of this type. If you have a legal question, it's probably not too much that I haven't been asked along the way. But hey, if I get a new question, that's great. And be glad to help. Let's go to our first caller, Douglas in Tampa.
Hi, sir. My grandfather just recently passed away, but I found out that my father was the executor on his life insurance policy, and three months ago, my aunt, she went into the hospital while he was he had like dementia and was kind of incoherent and stuff, and she had him sign over his life insurance policy to her, and then she before he passed away, she she took the money out of the account and closed it for half of what it was valued at to pay for his funeral before he died. And my dad found out about that, and he ended up having to pay for the funeral with cash. And then she hasn't paid him back or made any payments on the funeral she didn't do anything with the funeral. So I'm just trying to figure out what to do with what happened there.
A couple of things. The most common reason that wills and trusts and documents get contested are either undue influence or incompetence. I think in this case, maybe both of the, you have some a little bit of both of those in your case. So the sounds like the lady absolutely did wrong, and it should be pursued. I mean, she could have committed a crime. She could report her to the police or the sheriff, and also you could file a lawsuit against her. I mean, you could take legal action against her, and I think she would probably lose, from what I've heard.
Yeah, well, his doctor was a longtime friend of his, and I don't think she realized it because she hadn't been around for the last 15 years. She kind of left the family and went her way, but he wrote a letter to my dad explaining what happened and how he did. You know, the doctor didn't think that my grandfather was in any position to sign anything when she came in.
Yeah, well, that's an important letter to have, and, you know, that's proof that someone took advantage of him. So some interested party, your dad perhaps, should hire an attorney to write a letter and go after it.
Okay. All right, that sounds good. Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you. All right, Mark Twain said, you never know a person until you share an inheritance with them. And how true that is. And I go through similar questions like that one every week. And actually, in my office, Undue Influence is attempted every week, where some child who's maybe even taking care of the parent brings the parent to my office and starts to try to tell me what the parent wants to do and so forth. And you have undue influence because the answer of what they were trying to do was to get things to benefit themselves. You have an open phone line, and Chester dropped off. They need Chester, call back. We'll put you first if you want to call back in. You have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. And you can ask just about any question that you like, and we'll see if we can get you pointed in the right direction with maybe get a little peace of mind as well. So what is probate? I get asked that all the time, and I get asked, well, I've got a will. Why does my will have to go through probate? It's simply probate is the legal process of getting assets out of a deceased person's name. So if you die with an account, you die with a piece of real estate, you die with a home, you die with any asset just in your name, even though you have a will, it's in a deceased person's name upon your death and goes through probate. There are various ways to avoid probate, including one is joint ownership. Now, I'll get asked all the time, should I put my child's name on an account? Can we co-own that account without avoid probate? Yes, but if the child gets sued, divorced, or has an accident, then you've jeopardized your ownership of the account. If you make the child a beneficiary on the account, would that avoid probate? Yes. But nothing really happens to that account until you pass away. It's paid on death type of an account, a beneficiary account. A living trust is perhaps, in my opinion, one of the better ways to go about avoiding probate because you own it, you control it, it's the same entity, and there's no probate upon death about any assets in a living trust. Do you have questions about that? Or any other legal matter, real estate, family law, can be just about any area of the law. And let's go to our next caller. And the toll-free number is 877-943-9673. In about 5 minutes, we're going to have our Medicaid attorney on for a few minutes. His name is John Fraser. If you have a Medicaid question about applying for Medicaid and how to do that, we'll keep him on. If you have a question for him, otherwise he's going to be giving you the tip of the day on Medicaid and VA planning. Let's go to Lawrence in Tampa. Hey, Lawrence.
Yes.
Yes, sir. What can we do for you?
I bought a timeshare about 15 years ago. I paid for it, and I've been trying to sell it for the past 8 years, and I couldn't sell it. So this attorney told me that they could get rid of it. And he charged me $2,500 to get rid of it. But after 3 years, he has not been able to get rid of it. And then last year, he sent me, no, I talked to somebody in his office, and they told me that the people in Orlando would not return any of their correspondence. So the people in Orlando sent me a notice and said they were going to sell my timeshare, but in the meantime, they sent my information to the credit people.
Yeah.
So now my credit looks bad, and I'm just wondering, is there any way I can get my money back from the attorney? Because so far he hasn't done anything.
Well, did you sign a fee agreement?
Yes.
And what
with the attorney?
Yeah, I'd have to see the fee agreement, basically, to advise you whether or not, you know, whether he's complied with everything he said he would do, or promised to do, or contractually agreed to do in the fee agreement.
Okay.
It's all based on that. You know, I don't think an attorney would give you a guarantee that he could get you out of the timeshare, and if he didn't, give your money back. But the attorney, you know, if some attorney would have to read and review the fee agreement. And then maybe write a letter in your behalf asking for a refund and see what happens.
Okay. So I can call you at this number and find out.
No, my office number, you're in Tampa, so you can call 727. We have 20 offices around Florida, so the local number for you in Tampa would be 727-586-3306. And you can make an appointment at extension 200.
Okay.
All right.
All right.
Thank you.
We will call you.
Thank you. All right. I would love to, by the way, to find, timeshare companies that promise to get you out of timeshares. They advertise all the time. They want your money. And very seldom do you hear a success story. So if you have a success story about getting out of a timeshare, call and share it. I would love to hear it. And I would love to even have an attorney on my staff or an attorney that I could find that was real successful in getting people out of timeshares. Because I think there are tons of people listening to the show right now that would love to get out of their timeshare. And I don't have a really good resource to be able to refer people to or somebody who has had a tremendous success rate on doing that. And it's like when you buy a timeshare, you're like stuck with it forever, it seems. And there's bound to be a way, because there's high-pressure sales on these things, usually. And then you wind up with it for life. Let's go to Don in Atlantic Beach. Hey, Don.
Hi, good morning. I was calling because I had a Medicaid question, and I was hoping the gentleman that you referred to earlier was available.
Well, okay, if you hang on, I don't know if we can do two calls. I'll ask my Tampa switchboard whether we can do two calls at once.
Yes, we can.
All right, Joe.
I can call back.
No, he's going to call here and just... Joe, is he on the line yet?
Not yet, but as soon as he does, I'll patch him through.
All right, there he is right there probably. Hey, Don, just hang on a second, but go ahead and tell me your question, and then I'll help you phrase it to John.
Okay, I was wondering if assets in a living trust are reviewed by Medicaid. Do they count toward your income or your net worth?
Yes, they do. They are countable assets. Is John Fraser on the line yet?
He is now.
Okay, John?
Hey.
Hey, we have a caller here. I kind of announced you were going to be on the show for a few minutes, and we have a caller, Don, from Atlantic Beach, and he's asking if assets in a living trust are countable when you're trying to do the Medicaid application.
Yes, a living trust is really designed to distribute a person's estate without probate when they pass away. So a living trust will not protect assets for Medicaid. Those trust assets are completely available to the grantor, so they are not protected as far as Medicaid qualification is concerned.
Okay. John, tell us what assets are exempt from the calculation.
Well, the Florida homestead is exempt. There is a limit on that, but it's over $550,000. So for our typical client, the homestead is going to be exempt. And if you have a spouse living there, there's no limit on the homestead. One automobile is exempt. Other automobiles are also exempt as long as they're 7 years old or older and not luxury vehicles. There is a type of trust called a special needs pool trust, which the assets held in that trust are exempt. Income-producing property is exempt. So if you have an individual with hundreds of thousands of dollars in countable assets, you can convert those assets into rental property. That's non-countable for Medicaid planning purposes. An irrevocable funeral service or cremation contract of any value is a non-countable asset. Another asset called a burial savings account for $2,500 for each spouse is non-countable. The Medicaid applicant spouse is allowed to have $2,000 in countable assets, and the community spouse living in the community is allowed to have about $126,420. Another strategy that we use for married individuals with larger amounts of money is called spousal refusal. So if we transfer the countable assets to the community spouse, there is no asset limit for the community spouse. So that's a way we can get individuals with hundreds of thousands, even over $1 million on Medicaid. So that's a basic overview of the exempt categories.
All right, Don, do you have any other questions?
Just one quick one.
All right.
Assuming there was Social Security income, is that countable?
Well, that's on the income side. Florida has what is called an income limit. We're also known as an income cap state. This year, the income limit for the Medicaid applicant is $2,313 a month in gross income. So as long as the Social Security is below $2,313 per month, then that's not an issue. If the gross income exceeds that amount, we need what is called a qualified income trust. So it's a bright line test in the state of Florida, as well as about half of the other states, which are referred to income cap states.
How does that work?
Well, the Medicaid applicant, typically it's going to be the spouse or the power of attorney, is going to sign off on what is called a qualified income trust. After the trust is signed, then the person who's signed off on the trust will then take the trust to a bank, open a new checking account. Let's say the Medicaid applicant's name is John Smith. So the new checking account will be called the John Smith Income Only Trust. And then each month, a portion of the Medicaid applicant's income must be deposited into the income trust checking account. And the Medicaid portion is then paid to the nursing facility each month out of the income trust checking account.
I see.
All right, John.
Okay, well.
Go ahead, sir.
No, that's all I had, and I appreciate all that information.
Do you have someone that's about to go into a nursing home in your life?
No.
Okay. All right.
No,
well, good.
I'm just looking down the road.
All right. Well, you've got some good information there. Hey, John, do you have a tip for the day for Medicaid and VA?
Yeah. What I wanted to talk about, I think that there's quite a bit of confusion based on the client calls that we get. We receive a large number of calls from individuals who are not yet needing care. And I think one of the most confusing things for prospective Medicaid clients is the distinction and very significant difference between an assisted living facility, or also known as an ALF, or a skilled nursing facility, also primarily called a nursing home. So these two types of facilities have different licenses. They have separate licenses, and I think a way to think about it is the difference between a physician and a nurse. They have different licenses. So assisted living facilities and skilled nursing facilities have different licenses. And the biggest difference is that we have a very significant waiting list for assisted living Medicaid. So if a person were to enter an assisted living facility, even if they were financially qualified, they would not be able to obtain Medicaid benefits right now. The way around that is Florida has something called the 60-day nursing home transition program. And what that means is that if you spend 60 days in a nursing facility on Medicaid, then after 60 days, you bypass the assisted living Medicaid waiting list, and you can then receive assisted living Medicaid benefits, but not vice versa. So I think that that's a very, very confusing issue for when families call in, and I think many people just think that assisted living facilities and nursing facilities are the same. They're not. They're very, very different, and they actually have different licenses through the state of Florida and different rules for getting Medicaid.
All right, John, give us your contact information. If any of our listeners, and you do Medicaid all over the state of Florida, so if anyone listening on their multiple radio stations can call you, please, or email you, please give your contact information.
Oh, yes, I've done Medicaid cases throughout the state of Florida. I've done over 2,500 Medicaid cases successfully. I also work in VA benefits planning, and that is also primarily for assisted living residents. So if you call in, I can certainly talk to you about the difference between VA and Medicaid benefits. The office number is 727-586-3306, extension 104. Cell phone 813-431-3193, and email address johnjohn@attypip.com.
All right, John, you have a wonderful day. Thanks so much for calling in.
Okay, you too. Have a great day.
All right, thank you. All right, that was our Medicaid attorney with the firm. His name is Attorney John Frazier. He's written several books, publications, has 2,500 successful Medicaid cases, applications where What does a Medicaid attorney do? Actually, they've learned the art of shifting things around, protecting assets that you already have, maximizing what you can get in the way of government benefits. Hey, if you have a legal question about any other area, or that one too, actually, if you have a legal question, period, you call our toll-free number, 877-943-9673. 877-943-9673. Phone lines are open. Questions can be about wills, trust, probate, guardianship, personal injury, power of attorneys. Can be just about any area of law. Hey, if you need a speaker, that's one thing I love to go out and do in the community. So I gave a presentation this past Thursday morning at the United Methodist Church in Sun City Center. It was for a men's group. It was an 8 o'clock breakfast meeting for a men's group. Talked about the trial of Jesus as Easter is coming up pretty soon. So I usually get asked to do that multiple times in various places. But if you need a speaker, and the topic can be about any legal topic, or it can be about something like a special event type of trial of Jesus program. And what we do in that program is talk about the laws back then versus the laws today, the trials that Jesus went through with the Jewish court system and the Roman court system and the trial before the people. Talked about the laws back then. The laws go all the way back to Moses, and the Romans had the law of the 12 tables. And 87 of the 120 provisions in their laws are almost identical to what we have today. So it's very interesting legal analysis. In fact, the pastor got up Thursday, and as he was doing his close, he said he had not had that much detail and a message of that type since going to seminary when he was in college. All right, let's go to our next caller. Let's go to Lee in Pinellas Park. Hey, Lee.
Hi there. Good morning, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. And you?
Good. I'm fine. Listen, I have a different issue. I have a deed. It's mortgage, but I have a deed on this place I bought. I got with my name on it, but I got it before I got married. I'm married now, and I want to change it to protect my wife in case something happens to me, or in other words, put it in joint ownership or whatever. What's the best thing to how to title it?
Well, you want to deed it from you to you and your wife? You just do a quit claim deed.
Okay.
A pretty simple matter, actually.
What name do we put on it, then?
Well, your name and her name, your wife.
Yeah.
And that means it's tenants by the entirety, so that means if you die, it's 100% hers.
Oh, that's all there is, just putting both names on it, then.
Yeah, it's pretty simple.
Okay.
Now, you might want to check.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that the mortgage company is not going to, it's not going to matter that her name is not on the mortgage, although you might check with them to see if they have any special rules, because usually when you do a deed with a property with a mortgage on it, the mortgage company might have the right to call the balance due, but that's not usually the case I've experienced from a husband to a husband and wife.
Yeah.
But you might check with the mortgage company just to make sure you're not going to run. You know, if you had a little one sentence piece of correspondence from them saying that, you know, that's fine, go ahead and do that. That's not going to change your status of the mortgage with us. That would be great.
Yeah, since I'm still on it and since I'm still responsible.
Yeah, you would still be on it, but you're putting someone on there who's not responsible to them on it.
Right.
And usually upon death, they would allow a spouse to assume the mortgage.
Uh-huh.
Or you could just take the extra 5-minute step of calling them and trying to get something in writing that they don't object to you doing that.
Excellent. I was going to do that anyways, but you've expanded that thought a little bit. Okay, thanks very much, sir.
All right, thank you.
Bye-bye.
If you want to call the show, we're about a little bit more than halfway through the show. You have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Let's go to Kathy in Sarasota.
Hey, good morning. I have elderly parents. One is actually at the VA nursing facility. My other parent is still at home. This was the wish that they stay at home and we bring care in, and that's what's been going on. They don't qualify for hospice. They have dementia. The doctor's been excellent, but we had an odd thing happen where I got a phone call from the doctor to bring my mother in the very next day, and never had this happen. The first thing the nurse says to me, your mother looks clean. You know, she looks good. And then the doctor came in, and that was the first thing he said, too. Now, my parents have been going to this doctor for a long time. Would I be concerned if someone reported something that about parental care?
Well, I don't. That is kind of odd that they would both say that. And it's kind of odd.
And
that
then
maybe
asked what the game plan was. And they've known what the game plan was. Keep my mother at home and bring care in. Now, I will tell you, the siblings stay with my mother at night. And there's sometimes different discussions about that. But is the state of Florida have a law if a doctor gets called about something to come in?
Well, no, I don't think there's a law. I mean, I think there are people who can file. You know, if you had been Johnny on the spot, you probably would have asked the doctor, why did you call? What prompted this call? And then they would have maybe been forced to explain why they were calling you if it wasn't a routine thing they'd done in the past. And you could even call.
I did ask that.
Yeah. You could even call back and say, look, I've been really concerned about this, and it's causing me loss of sleep, and I really want to know why, what prompted the call.
I did do that, and they told me it's because my mother has dementia, and the doctor needs to now see her more every 3 months. And I said, well, that's unusual because my mother's dementia, I've been, moved down to Florida here to help caretake for 3 years, and this has never happened. So I just wanted to, be sure if someone called in that was concerned about my mother's care, I just kind of wanted to cover that base, but I'm not really getting information from the doctor's office.
Well, if the expense of the doctor's visit is covered by Medicare.
It is, yeah.
I don't see anything wrong with an elderly person with dementia going to see the doctor every 3 months. I mean, I think that's probably a good thing.
Okay.
I mean, I would.
Good. Well, then maybe the whole thing was just on the, I don't know. I just never had him say that she's clean, she's healthy. She looks good.
Well, those are all good things.
I never had both of them say that. Yeah.
Yeah.
So no worries then.
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay, good.
All right.
Okay, great.
All right, thank you.
Thanks.
All right.
Bye.
We're broadcasting from Jacksonville today. So far all our calls have been from Tampa. We did have one from Atlantic Beach, Largo Pinellas Park, Sarasota. And we'll go to Sarasota again to talk to Joanne.
Hi, good morning.
Hey, good morning.
I have a question with regard to my estate. I only have one child, and I created a last will and testament, and I have everything lined up with regard to living will, etc. But he seems concerned about if I become ill and then I end up in a nursing home, Medicare will come back and get everything. Now,
Medicare doesn't come back to get. You talking about Medicaid?
Well, I'm not on Medicaid.
Well, no, but Medicare doesn't come after anything.
Okay.
So the only concern he would have...
I had a ladybird deed drawn up, and I executed it, but did not record it on my property.
Mm-hmm.
It's giving me, I think, a life estate? Is that the idea?
Mm-hmm.
Is there any problem with me recording that? In other words, if I record it and then I decide to sell, is there any problem for me?
Did you do this deed yourself, or did you have an attorney do it for you?
Yes, I did it myself. No. I had an attorney do it. You're right.
Okay. And you asked for a ladybird deed?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Well, actually, I mentioned a quitclaim deed, and he said a ladybird deed.
If a ladybird deed was done, in my personal opinion, a living trust, putting your property with a quitclaim deed in a living trust is better than a ladybird deed.
Okay, a living trust.
Yeah, because what the successor trustee could do, could sell the house if they needed to, for example, while you're living, to use the money for your benefit and the lifestyle you're accustomed to living, whereas a ladybird deed is just one way to avoid probate because you have a remainder on the deed. But there have been multiple issues with title companies and closings and things like that with a ladybird deed, whereas my experience is that those problems don't exist with a trust, and a trust is better for you if you became incapacitated before death.
Well, what's the difference between a quitclaim deed and a ladybird deed?
No, you can do you can have the ladybird feature within a quitclaim deed. I mean, so
I see. Can you tell me the difference? What does the ladybird deed actually say?
A ladybird deed is just a way to make a remainder beneficiary on the deed upon your death.
Right.
And a quitclaim deed is just transferring your interest, whatever interest you have, from yourself to... I use quitclaim deeds almost every day, and the quitclaim deed is a deed transferring the interest that you would have in your home to yourself as trustee of your trust, mainly to avoid the probate of the home.
Okay, so you think a quitclaim deed is better?
I think the living trust, and then we would use a quitclaim deed putting your home in the trust, is better than the ladybird deed. That's my opinion.
So you want me to, it would be necessary to create a new will, just the last will and testament?
Well, a living trust.
A living trust. Okay.
If you chose to go that way. But, you know, you need to sit down with, I would be glad to sit down with you or go back to your attorney and discuss the difference between wills, trust, ladybird deeds, and so forth.
Now, what kind of trust? Just a living trust?
Yeah, living revocable trust.
Living. Well, what's the irrevocable? The ones that are non-revocable trust.
Most people don't do those. You know, I would say 97% of my clients do a living revocable trust, and very few do an irrevocable trust.
Okay. When we use the word revocable, is that in the favor of myself?
Yes, that means you can amend, change, revoke the document at any time. So if you want to change your trustee, you want to add a beneficiary, you can do whatever you want to do. It's totally amendable.
I know he's coming to visit and he's going to get on to this. And, you know, I'm very cogent and I want to keep control of everything until I leave.
Well, no, you would be the grantor, you would be the trustee, you would be in total control.
I see. Thank you. Your program is very useful.
Well, thank you very much. Thanks for calling.
Now, will you have someone tell me your location and number again?
I'll give you my toll-free number. It's 1-800.
Yes.
226.
Mm-hmm.
3529.
226-3529.
Yeah, extension.
Just writing it down.
Extension 200. We have multiple office locations around Jacksonville area that we have access to.
226-3529.
Yes, ma'am.
And did you say 1-866?
No, extension 200.
No, the first part of it.
No, 1-800.
1-800, okay.
Yeah, 226-3529.
You don't have any other offices within the state?
I do. We have 20 office locations, so that's why I use an 800 number, because I have 14 radio stations carrying the program all over the state. So.
Oh, okay, dear. Thanks so much.
All right, thank you.
Bye.
You're listening to Ask an Attorney, all about Florida law. I'm Attorney Joe Pippin, practicing attorney. We have 20 minutes left in the show. If you'd like to call, you have a toll-free number, which is 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. Law office is open. And if can help you in any way, untangle some legal question that's floating around your mind. Maybe you even lost a little sleep last night thinking about something that didn't seem quite right or could have been better, and you have a question about it. That's what we're here for, just to give you a little peace of mind, maybe make your weekend just slightly better, a little less worry-free. Hey, if you'd like our free estate planning poster sheet, we give these out at all of our speaking engagements. And almost every client, I use it as a way to explain living trust and what your options are in estate planning, and has a little cost of probate article there of what probate actually costs. Tells you how to get things into a trust, tells you the three options in estate planning on one side of the sheet. On the back side of the sheet has all of our office locations, And it has shows information about the radio shows we do, and has all of the attorneys and phone numbers and so forth and website information. If you'd like the sheet, I'd love to mail it to you. It's a large double-sided poster-sized sheet on estate planning, and you can get it one of three ways. You can call our toll-free office number, which is 1-800-226-3529. That's 1-800-226-3529. You can send me an email requesting, I need your name and address, at Joe, J-O-E, at attypip.com. You can text me the information at 727-627-3967. That's 727-667-3967. If you want to text me and I need your name and address for you to get the poster sheet. Love to mail it to you. You have a toll-free number to call the radio show, which is 877-943-9673. That's 877-943-9673. So I had a question yesterday about transferring. A person had some rental homes, and they wanted to know whether or not they could be put in a trust. Well, yeah, you do a quitclaim deed. And so we have another caller on the line there. So Lar, we must have two Lars in a row. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah. Is this Lar?
This is Lar. Yeah, Laura from Jacksonville, Florida.
Okay, we got two Lars in a row. I thought they had just left the name of the previous caller up there. So what can I do for you?
Well, thank you. I'm a first-time listener and very excited to hear you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you. My question is, I have all of my assets in a POD, my mutual funds, my bank accounts.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have my house, and it's fully paid for. I'm married. It's in my name. And I want the house to go to my children. How can I avoid probate?
Well, you can put your house into a living trust. You can.
Okay.
You could do a Lady Bird. The whole discussion with another lady named Laura from Jacksonville is right before you. Actually went through comparing a living trust versus a ladybird deed. Those would be the two ways to probably most often do it. And I think the living trust way is better because you can put all of your other accounts in there as well. The ones you have paid on death means nothing really happens to those accounts until you die. So more than likely, you're going to become incapacitated for, I know people don't like to think about this, but in reality, you might become incapacitated for a period of time. Sometimes it's a short period of time. Sometimes it's a longer period of time. You're still living. With a living trust, a person can take over when you no longer want to write checks or are able to write checks or just don't want to fool with it or can't. Your successor trustee can pay all of your bills and handle your finances while you're living. Plus, you could put the home in the living trust to avoid the probate process.
Wouldn't a power of attorney cover that?
Yeah, but a power of attorney is void upon death. And then so if anything like your home is out there and it's going to be in a deceased person's name, then that would go through the petition to determine homestead process through the probate court. So if you had a living trust, which is just a fancy will, then you can avoid probate. You know, when I give seminars, I ask the question, usually I go through the three options in estate planning, doing nothing, have a will, having a trust. When I get to the trust part, I say, does anybody here have a negative thought about a trust and why maybe you haven't done one? And sometimes I'll get, well, what does it cost? So then we'll go through the example of what a trust costs. And we have flat fees that we publish on our website, by the way. So if a married couple did two wills, two power of attorneys, healthcare surrogates, and living wills, the fee for those six documents is $620. If they had done a living trust, then all of those documents are included, plus the trust, plus the deed of their home into the trust, and it's $795. So it's like $175 more. to avoid probate, avoid guardianship, make it quick, easy, fast, efficient, and private. So the cost is not a factor. So then somebody might say, well, what do I have to do once I create the trust? Well, a trust is a bucket, I call it. So then I would do your home of your real estate into the trust, but and give you instructions on how to put whatever financial accounts you want to put in the trust. So your name is Laura, so on your bank account your name is Laura, but on if you have a living trust, it's Laura, and then your last name, trustee, and the date of the trust. So it's just a simple name change, basically, adding the word trust after your name and the date of the trust to get the asset in the living trust, which could be used for your benefit if you became incapacitated.
Okay.
Sound logical?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
So you say the living revocable trust
right.
is better than a quick claim deed.
No, you do both. You do the trust and then you deed your home to the trust to avoid probate.
Oh, okay. All right.
Send in for a little poster sheet because it's a little diagram explaining this, plus five articles on estate planning explaining all of this of what your options are. So I'll give out the information about how to get that toward the end of the show again.
Okay. Yeah, I did write it down, but yeah, everyone else might want to.
All right.
Too. Okay.
All right. Well, thanks
Thank
for calling.
You.
Thank you.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Ask an Attorney All About Florida Law. We have about 10 minutes left in the show, a little bit less than 10. If you want to call, you have a toll-free number, 877-943-9673. Let's go to Mike in Sun City Center.
Hi, Joe. This is Mike. I have one of your packages that you did for us a few years ago, my wife and I.
Yes, sir.
And very happy with it. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
The question is about the quick claim deed that you did for us for our home here in Florida.
Mm-hmm.
Which is now paid off. And could you explain the reason to either file that with the county or not file it?
Well, it has to be filed sooner or later, but normally most of my clients, I think, don't record it now. And then the successor trustee at time of death would record it, and that's when they need to take possession of the property and do something with it. So while you're living, you and the trust are the same entity. With the same in doing the quitclaim deed is just mainly a way to avoid probate upon death. So the deed doesn't really it's signed by you and your wife and witnessed and notarized, so it can be recorded any time even after death. So there's no really need to record it now. And then if you did record it now and then you sold it, there are a few extra steps you have to go through with the sale. And right now, you could just if you sold it, you could tear up the quitclaim deed. Then you could just you and your wife could proceed individually with selling it.
There is one little advantage then. You have to not do it now.
Yeah,
it's just we're here in Florida, and my daughter, who's going to be the successor, is in New Hampshire. I just thought it would be easier if we filed it with the county now. But
yeah, all deeds get recorded if you're selling it to a different party. But since you and the trust are the same entity. There's just no real need to, and it can be recorded any time is the answer.
Good. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you for calling.
Right. Bye-bye.
All right. Let's go to Laura in Haines City.
Hi.
Hey, we've had 11 calls, and three of the ladies have been named Laura today so far.
Yes, sir. I heard. I have a great-grandson that is my grandson's son, and he has not established paternity for him. And he and the mom are not married, and they're talking of moving out of state with the little boy, and we haven't been able to see him very much anyway already. But I just was wondering what procedure you start with paternity test.
Well, you can demand one. The other party doesn't necessarily have to comply. If you're going to try to, you might be able to force it through a court, but your son would need to get a family law attorney to try to help with that.
Okay. All right.
All right.
I've used your company for a lot of years.
Okay.
And you're very satisfactory, and thank you for the information.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for calling.
Bye.
Let's go to Donna in Sarasota.
Good morning.
Hey Donna.
You may have just touched on it with the caller before the last, but does the revocable living trust eliminate probate?
Assets inside a living trust do not go through probate.
So anything that isn't either titled in the trust or where the trust is the beneficiary would still have to go through probate.
No, if the trust is the beneficiary, the only thing that goes through probate is something in a deceased person's name, not jointly held, and doesn't have a beneficiary.
Okay.
So things with the trust can be a beneficiary. There's still no probate.
Okay. But there is still a reason to have a trust and a will in the event there are assets that haven't either been changed in title or changed in beneficiary.
Yeah, but when you have a trust, you also have a will called a pour-over will, P-O-U-R okay. will. And that will leaves everything to the trust. But if you forget to put something in the trust that you should have and the pour-over will leaves it to the trust, then that one particular asset would go through probate. So the example is if you had five bank accounts and you put four of them in the name of the trust, all four of those would avoid probate. If you had one outside the trust that didn't have a beneficiary and now is just in a deceased person's name, the pour-over will would leave it to the trust, but that one account would have to go through probate.
Okay. In my case, the trust is titled as a testamentary trust.
Well, that means it's a trust created by your will, and that means you don't have a separate individual living trust now. So that means everything you have that's in the deceased person's name upon death would go through probate, and the trust is only formed after you die because of the will, the language in the will.
Okay, so I still have the expense of probate, or my heirs do.
Yeah, so you can remedy that with a living trust, though.
Instead.
Yes, okay. Ma'am.
So let me check my documents, because some of the financial institutions wouldn't take the testamentary trust as either title or beneficiary.
Yeah. Yeah, because it hasn't been formed yet. Your will calls for the creation of that after death.
Okay. All right. I will review that.
Yeah, just for your information, we do have an office in Lakewood Ranch down in Sarasota area.
Oh, okay. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Great. Bye-bye.
All right, we have several offices in Pinellas County, in Polk County, in Hillsborough County, Duval, Jacksonville, Claremont, Leesburg, the Villages, 20 office locations around the state of Florida. You can check us out on our website at www.attypip.com. Let's go to Paul. Hey, Paul. Where are you calling from?
High Springs.
High Springs, where's that?
Near Alachua.
Okay. Diesel. Yes, sir. What can we do for you? We've got about a minute and a half.
I own a home in a subdivision, a rural subdivision, and I got declarations of restrictive and protective covenants. Now, there's a lot of them. There's setbacks, number of units, travel trailers, livestock, and all these things say the lot shall be used for residential purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, that pretty much means that there's no leeway on that. Now, when it comes to fencing, it says the owner may fence his property along lines as follows.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say shall, it says may.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is there a legal difference between those two words?
Sure. You have may means you may, and shall means you shall.
Okay, so it says you may use different types of fences, tree board or barbed wire or field fence.
Mm-hmm.
But would the word may allow me to put other types of fencing up?
Well, it doesn't sound like it, but I think somebody would have to review the document. And do you have a some approval committee that has to approve things?
No. It says any owner or the developer.
Yeah.
And bring legal action, which I would imagine mitigation.
Paul, let me write down my cell number, because I've got to close the show now, and then you can call me if you want to a little bit later.
Okay.
All right, thanks. All right, if you'd like to get the free estate planning poster sheet or call our office for an appointment, perhaps you have a toll-free number, 1-800-226-3529. That's 1-800-226-3529, extension 200. If you want to email me a question or a request for an appointment, you can do that at Joe, J-O-E, at ATTYPIP.com. If you want to text me, you could go 727-667-1099. 3967. You have a great weekend. So long.